Welcome to East Meets West, episode 264. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang.
And it's a sad day, ladies and gentlemen. We were planning on recording this evening anyway. We got a late start because earlier this evening, they announced earlier this evening that Steve Jobs died. Apparently he died earlier this morning.
Yeah, it's not unexpected. I mean, he has looked rather frail of late. And
it was known that he had cancer.
He had
been fighting cancer for a long time. He had beaten it once.
He managed to kind of stave off some of the more damaging aspects of it by having that transplant. But I mean, it's that particular cancer that I had is something that Patrick Swayze also had, and it's not something that
pancreatic cancer.
Yes,
Bill Hicks also had it.
It's not something that you can recover from in the same way, say, like a tumor that might be in your leg or something where they can get at it.
So exactly, not unexpected.
Yeah,
but didn't expect it right when it was announced.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh no, I think part of the I guess on my part, I shouldn't say astonishment, but because it was so close to the new iPhone 4S
announcement. The iPhone 4S announcement yesterday, and I don't know if it's hindsight, but a lot of people are remarking that the tone yesterday felt somber, and perhaps that is why. One would assume that definitely Tim Cook, the new CEO of Apple, but also probably several of the other executives who were on stage, like Phil Schiller, knew that Steve was getting closer and closer to the end. I mean, that is usually the way with these kinds of cancers, is that within a few days of someone's dying, they take a turn where you sort of know it could happen anytime.
And, one of the comments made by my coworker, it brought into thought into my mind because he was commenting on how the Boing Boing site and a couple of other sites
I loved
like
what Boing Boing did. That was really nice.
But I mean, it's one of those things where they had to
explain. What they did was they reskinned the site to look like
the original Mac OS.
Yeah, original Mac OS.
And it's one of the
number on it.
And Wired had a pretty good, obituary on him. And, what he was commenting is that it feels kind of weird that people made these in advance because no one knew when Steve would go. So someone had to make the decision, well, we need to mock these up and create them.
Well, that's pretty standard, though.
I mean, it is.
We knew that he was not doing well when he resigned in August. I mean, Steve Jobs does not resign as CEO unless things are very bad. So I think everybody knew that.
I'm not saying that it's not procedure, but it's still, there's a certain, morbidity and kind of macabre. I don't know. If you had to build a website on someone.
Well, I have had to build OBIT files before.
I don't know. It feels kind of, it's a very unnerving thing for me. It just seems, because it's like you're just kind of waiting, to hit the okay, now we publish button.
Well, you are and you aren't. I prepared OBIT files for Katharine Hepburn, Cary Grant, Bob Hope, all these sorts of people for National Public Radio in 1993. And none of them were on death's door. There was nobody that we expected to die the next day. But my job was to gather all the clippings, gather all the sound bites that would be needed, and get the materials ready so that when they did die, it would be easy for someone to put together a retrospective right away. That's the way they did it at NPR's Morning Edition at the time. As far as Wired goes, it looks like somebody mocked up something saying, look, you know what, Steve Jobs, this is going to be massive news. And we know it's going to happen within the next year. We just had a very good idea that was true. I think people hoped it wasn't true, but it seemed, in a clinical way that was probably true. So let's do him proud. Let's come up with something since we have that kind of notice. Because you could make the opposite accusation to a site that treated it as if it was a perfect surprise. Like, well, you obviously misjudged the importance of this news event. I get what you're saying. It does strike a sort of macabre note that they had it planned, but at the same time, Apple.com changed their front page in a way that certainly must have been planned.
Yes.
Boing Boing skinning. That's the kind of thing where I'm certain that Boing Boing and every other news outlet at the end of August, when Steve Jobs resigned, had the discussion, this probably means that he's going to die, as sad as that is. What are we going to do on that day? Let's figure it out now, so we're not scrambling when the news finally breaks.
Yeah, and you know, I understand the logic behind it. I understand the reasoning, but I don't find any real flaw in that thinking. It just, to me, it's kind of a death watch, you know, and it feels kind of creepy.
It is. Yeah.
Oh, I know. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And so your reaction's perfectly natural because you're reacting to the truth of the matter. Yeah. It's interesting. Andy Anatko from Chicago Sun-Times was on Twit with us during our live coverage of it, and he said that he had not prepared anything in advance because it wasn't his job to write the factual obit. So he didn't, he didn't have to have it up right away. And he also felt like he couldn't until the moment, that it wouldn't be honest and it wouldn't be genuine. We didn't really prepare anything in advance at Twit. Leo had been thinking about it. I certainly, in my own mind, had been thinking about what I would say and what I thought. But we sort of went with it as soon as it happened. We were in the middle of a show, actually, interviewing Kevin Marks, who luckily was a very fitting guest to have on to react to the news, because he worked at Apple, and he's one of the people who was instrumental in creating podcasts and things like that. So he had a lot of relevant things to say, but it was off the cuff, and I think because of that, it was very genuine. So I can see it both ways. I mean, you should react honestly and genuinely, but if you can prepare a fitting tribute because you have a little extra time, then you should. I think what's interesting is, I'm not seeing as much of the reaction that I expected of people saying, why are you making such a big deal out of this? It's just Steve Jobs. He was a horrible man. I never liked him or anything he made. I've seen a little bit of that, but frankly, the haters are in a severe minority this time. I think a lot of people really are sad to see him go.
It's kind of hard. I think part of it is, say, a celebrity that's kind of on a self-destructive path.
Michael Jackson.
People can argue it's like they brought it on themselves, their behavior, their attitude toward life, and their preoccupation with the moment. Steve Jobs was a very methodical, very forward-thinking person. I mean, he wasn't like that. He wasn't a person to be reckless in that fashion. And as judgmental as this sounds, maybe people valued him as, kind of a person that you would feel sorry for, you would have sympathy for in a situation like this, versus someone who just out and out went out, did something ridiculous or stupid that would obviously get them, in a position of extreme danger or even a fatal situation where it's like, well, you know what? They were drinking when they were driving, and when they hit that, tree or something, what did you expect?
Yeah, Steve Jobs is somebody who died too soon. I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I mean, anybody who dies too soon in a way, but there's a certain expectation of people in their 80s, 90s or so that they lived a long life, and it's very sad, but it was their time. Steve Jobs was 56.
Yeah, that's relatively
young. It's not super young. It's not like he was cut down to 27 or anything,
but you know,
it's he will be outlived by his co-founder, Steve Wozniak, by quite a while.
One of the things I've noticed is it's very customary when a person passes not to speak ill of that person.
At least here in the U.S. it is.
Yeah. At least in the U.S. But, is that something that, I don't know if it's right in all occasions. Like, when Nixon kind of bit it, there were plenty of people who were like,
It was all of a sudden, Nixon was a statesman.
Yeah,
And Nixon was misjudged by history, and
he did a lot of
good things, but he was let's not change the fact he did a lot of horrible things.
he was a raging jerk. He did a lot of positive things for the country, but that doesn't take away from the fact that he was a person of who could be both a bit generous and a bigoted a-hole. On the other hand, and you know, it's one of those things. Do you kind of brush out the bad and just bring out the good, or do you bring a balanced, you know, he did this, but he also did this. You know, he was a great father, but he also, you know, he also hated, you know, girls or something. He only wanted sons. You know what I mean? So I don't know. I don't really hear that much too much negative about Steve Jobs other than his managerial style.
Yeah, he was very arrogant, maybe very strict.
Yeah.
Not a
he was very he did not exercise self-censorship when it came to criticizing people and their faults. So you know, it's, I don't know. I mean, like, at some point, you know, how long do you have to wait before it's okay to kind of bad talk someone who passed away?
100 years.
No, 100?
I don't know.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of that South Park joke. It's like, you know, they can't make fun of AIDS in the episode because it's too soon. You have to give it a couple of more decades before you can actually poke fun at it. And, you know, I don't know. It's like, you know, if you had, when Pol Pot died, you know, the people weren't running out and saying, oh my, you know, oh my gosh, this guy is such a hero, a statesman, a freedom fighter.
His killing fields were not all about killing.
And, you know, I'm not trying to make light of it, but
I know what you mean. Adolf Hitler would be even a more extreme example. I don't think a lot of non-Nazis mourned his passing either.
But you know, I've also it's interesting you bring up Hitler and the Godwin's Law.
Godwin's Law just means that most conversations will end up bringing up Hitler. It doesn't mean you have to stop talking.
No, I understand.
That's a corollary.
But what I've noticed is you know, at least a cottage industry and kind of more of the backstory, the other life of Hitler, not just the guy who rampaged through Poland, you know, marched on Paris, you know, sent up, you know.
He was more than just a mass killer and fanatic. There was another side to him.
You know, it's hard. I mean,
I think with Hitler, and this is why Godwin's Law exists, right? Because it's not comparable to almost anything else. With Hitler, you almost get so tired of the 100% evil accusation that you start to wonder, well, isn't there something? I mean, maybe he was 99% evil, but wasn't there something? And if there was, what was it? And how does that contrast? It's like you're hungry to just see that different story be told because it's never told. With somebody like Nixon, there are plenty of people who lauded Nixon while he was in office, after he got caught in the Watergate scandal, who defended him and pointed out his good points. So it wasn't nearly the same thing. And what he did that was bad wasn't even... ridiculous for me to even try to express that it can't be compared to Hitler, because it's not the same thing at all. Although some people compared him to Hitler because he was in charge of the war in Vietnam and the bombings and all of that. So, you know, I mean, it's still, he's not on that same level, whatever you think of him. And so I think with him, it's more, it's a better example of saying, well, look, here's somebody who maybe you didn't love, but now that they're gone, let's try to remember them well. I think that is a human instinct to say to remember the dead well, because maybe evolutionarily there's some part of us that just, you know, that selects for a better community. It draws the community together or whatever. Maybe Sinatra is a better example. I brought that up earlier when we were covering this on Twit too, where because it's like Steve Jobs didn't have effects on life and death nearly like Richard Nixon did. But Sinatra, to all accounts, was a raging bastard in real life in many respects. But he had an excellent singing voice and recorded some fantastic music. Not everyone agrees on that, but he was talented. And so Steve Jobs could be seen that way. You may think, well, he was arrogant, and in person he was mean, but he led a company in a way that you can't argue was successful.
Nixon or Steve Jobs?
Steve Jobs.
Okay, so like Nixon leading the company? It's like, Okay, I guess the U.S. is sort of
Well, the companies, the United States, corporate states of America. No. I mean that Steve Jobs may have been mean and nasty.
Oh, yeah.
In person, I don't know that he was. I did not know the man.
You know, I've heard the same thing about. I don't know. You know, See's Candy, right?
I do.
The woman behind it. From what I've heard, she was a pretty mean piece of work too. Well, it's interesting.
And you know, to be successful, it is often thought that. It is an advantage to be arrogant and
ruthless,
somewhat mean. It doesn't mean that all successful people are mean. I think Tony Hsieh is a good example of somebody who's incredibly nice and sensitive and very successful.
No, he's the exception that proves the rule.
But I want to resist the fact that there's a rule. I think there are plenty of personality types that become.
You're too naive, Tom. Too naive.
No, because. The reason I say that is because people say, oh, well, then I'm going to start being nasty. I'm going to use that as an excuse to be mean, and they won't be successful. It's not about that. It's just there are several personality types that can be successful. One of them is arrogant.
Well, I think you need a certain level of arrogance in any kind of venture because you need to have enough confidence in your idea, your product.
No, I think I agree with you about confidence, but arrogance can lead to confidence and arrogance can rise from confidence, but it doesn't always have to be so. I think there are plenty of people who are confident without arrogance. They are often linked together.
I think you do need that bit of conceit to know that you're better. And, you know, it does borderline, I mean, being arrogant in that, you know, you cannot let people tell you your product is the wrong product for this day and age.
Depends on how you define arrogance. I could sort of
say it's very subjective.
Just the idea of saying I'm right. Which you have to do to be successful. If you sit around going, no, I'm wrong, then you're not going to be successful. But, you know, so if you sort of define arrogance very strictly, the idea of saying, well, I'm right is sort of arrogant. How do you know you're right?
I do that at work all the time. Hasn't won me too many friends.
Sometimes confidence is seen as arrogant when it's not.
You know, it's interesting, but you bring that up. I mean, in any situation, any two parties, what one sees as, you know, I'm just very confident. The other side is, well, you're arrogant. Mm-hmm. You know, you're just so full of yourself. How can you live? How can you wake up each morning and have that head so huge and heavy? How do you lift it off the bed because it's swelled so large?
I tend to think of arrogance as being born of lack of confidence sometimes. That arrogance is sort of a negative. What is the Oxford definition of arrogance? Well, I've got Webster here. That'll do. An attitude of superiority manifested in an overbearing manner or in presumptuous claims or assumptions. So defined that way, I would say you don't always have to be arrogant to be confident or successful because you can have an attitude of superiority that is not overbearing or presumptuous. You could say I would argue.
So basically, you could be arrogant, keep your mouth shut.
By the way, Tony Hsieh, if people don't know, he is the CEO of Zappos that was sold to Amazon. But I would say he's not overbearing or presumptuous. But
maybe that's why he had to sell his company to Amazon.
And maybe his attitude is not even superior.
No, it probably is.
That's arguable, but he's certainly not overbearing or presumptuous. And I think Steve Jobs could arguably have been thought overbearing.
Watch, we're going to get an email. It's like, I used to work for Tony Hsieh, and he was overbearing.
Now, I would be very surprised to get that email. I've known some people who worked for
someone him. Post that in the comment section.
And he seemed very nice. I never met Steve Jobs. I'm sad about that.
Yeah.
The closest I ever got to Steve Jobs was in the audience for one of his Macworld keynotes.
Yes.
Everyone knows he was an amazing presenter, and in person, it was even more apparent.
He walked by me, but he was with a retinue of people. So,
closer to Bill Gates than Steve Jobs.
Yes, Bill Gates bumped or rubbed shoulders with me accidentally at CES 1 year.
Yeah, I was at that. There was the dance party, right? The PC Man.
No, it was after the. It was a couple of years after the dance party.
Really?
Dance
party. I danced next to Bill Gates.
Oh, so that's why I thought there were two of you.
Somebody in the chat room said I have the same nose as Steve Jobs. I don't know if that's true. And I don't know what it would mean. If
I don't know how you would do. Would you do measure the corpse or something? That's got to be.
Oh, no. Too soon.
See, that's the thing. Too soon. When does it stop becoming too soon?
You gotta feel it out. It's different in every case. Hindenburg? Is it too soon?
You got Hindenburg. You can do whatever. It's what? Like,
yeah, not too soon. Titanic?
No, not too soon.
World War II?
Not too soon.
Not too soon? Vietnam?
Not too soon. I think
you're starting to get on the borderlands there. Iraq War. Definitely.
Which one?
Well, I say Iraq War. Have we decided? That's a side note, but have we decided? It's the Gulf War.
The Gulf War was one. Yes, but it was Iraq.
And then I say the Iraq War for the second one, but I really don't.
Well, I mean,
I don't know what the official name of that second one is.
Operation Iraqi Freedom.
Well, Desert Storm.
Desert Storm. Oh, yeah.
Iraqi Freedom.
I remember after that one ended, everyone was selling all this surplus camo gear. At the Army Navy surplus.
Yeah.
It's like, who in the hell would wear that? And then I went to Vegas and a bunch of people were wearing it that were at the LVCC, the union guys that worked there. I guess they wear it. So when they're out in the desert, people can't find them.
I want to know, I want to ask you a prepared question. I thought of this earlier. We don't usually do this on East Meets West.
Ooh, I'm excited. I feel special.
What do you think it means to mourn the death of strangers? Why do we do that? Because there are so many people on Twitter, like half the trending topics on Twitter about Steve Jobs, people on Google+, all talking about Steve Jobs and how sad they are. People are crying, like legitimately crying, not crocodile tears. Like they're very sad about this. And these are people who've never met him.
Well, I'm wondering about that because there was, there was something I read a while ago that was titled Conspicuous Mourning or Compassion or something along those lines about how people needed to latch on emotionally to tragedies that didn't involve them directly or even tangentially. It just like, a bunch of people died.
Catharsis.
Yeah, a very cathartic thing. And they're latching on to it, not because they really cared, but they needed a way to kind of cathartically draw out their own emotions for something else. And it was interesting. And I'm wondering with Steve Jobs, it's maybe, not only were his products so ever present, but it's like, he was a name that people recognized. And I'm wondering, people may not emotionally feel directly connected to him, but in some way, because he's touched their lives, they feel they feel like they need
a connection. Yeah.
Well, they feel like they're obliged to. And I wonder if that's part of it. I mean, like, I can't think. I have not seen any tweet, Twitter, or actually, I haven't even seen any comments that are negative. Some people say, like, his products are overpriced, but he was a good guy. They might knock his business practices or they might knock Apple, but they qualify that with a statement that, I'm sad to see him go. He was a smart man. He was a brilliant man. You know what I mean? It wasn't just, I can be negative. There's something about, I think, an individual that really doesn't have any sort of negative connotation, at least emotionally, that people feel obliged to kind of pull out the emotional train going, for them.
I can't remember, maybe it was you who was mentioning this, that suicides declined after the death of Diana, Princess
Oh
Diana.
No, I did not mention that. That's very interesting.
I read that recently, and it was because there was that catharsis that you're talking about.
Yeah. I wonder if it's the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean,
but what makes it a Diana or a Steve Jobs? And that's interesting that I'm thinking about it. This is almost the level of Princess Diana. CNN went full wall to wall coverage of Steve Jobs' death. I went to pick up my dog, and the people who take care of the dog at the dog park, they're not sitting watching CNN. They're out playing with dogs. They knew about it. They'd heard about it.
I didn't even see this for Michael Jackson. I mean, and Michael Jackson had a very checkered background, with the children, kind of the less than normal behavior that he exhibited in public. And so, but with like Diana and Steve Jobs, you have people that, I mean, really, there's not a lot of negativity outside of their respective, you know. For Diana, it was her, you know, it was, you know, after the marriage, the divorce. Sure. And for Steve, it's just, you know, the running of Apple and how can you sell these products at such a high price? It's but there's nothing.
There's some fanboy hate. Because yeah. I don't like Apple, I like Android, or I don't like Apple, I like Windows. There's some green hate who are like Apple is too big of a corporation. They're trying to pretend like they care about the environment and they don't. And there's even some criticism of Steve Jobs' philanthropy that he didn't do anything with his money the way Bill Gates has been doing with a foundation. So there's a little bit on the fringes, but none of that is.
But there's
the
nothing intrinsic of, intrinsically. Yeah. There's nothing you can point like Steve Jobs mowed over a family of, you know, four. Yeah.
And
you know
most that's a very insidery sort of dislike. You either have to be extremely political or extremely technological to have either of those. The majority of the populace just doesn't care about either one of those things all that much.
So, you know, it's, you know, here's a guy who may or at least is responsible for a product you see every day. You probably own one, a phone or an iPod or a MacBook or a Mac. And so you, like we were saying earlier, you have a connection, and then there really is no negative side to this guy. All you hear about is that he was an innovator. He was a futurist who understood the way trends would move toward people. He helped define the way we lived. And so really, I think people get an overwhelming sense of he was very beneficial. He was very positive. He was giving.
Contributed to society.
Exactly. He was a contributor. He wasn't a taker. And so people, I think, are incredibly sympathetic to what they perceive as almost a selfless. I mean, Princess Di was the same way with her philanthropy work, with her, you know, work against landmines. They saw her as someone who in a privileged position who took that and used it for the benefit of other people outside of herself.
I thought it was odd on CNN earlier tonight. They were talking about Apple as an example of American exceptionalism, which I had never thought of before.
I have thought of that before too, but I think and it's not that Apple isn't. I think there are a lot of other companies that are also part of that.
Sure.
Group, but they're all different in so many ways, and I think that's what's brilliant. There, you know, Apple, and actually any business, there is no hard and fast rule. This is the way to success. What works for IBM will not work for an Apple. What works for Apple will not work for a Ford or work for, you know, U.S. Steel or whatever. You know, these are different companies with different environments that have different needs, different different inputs and different outputs. And, you know, in many respects, you know, a lot of those can be or cannot be changed by a very strong leader. I mean, Apple was very much a company that was driven to succeed, that was directed at the very top. It wasn't someone who said, you know, who just kind of came in and signed checks and you know, rubber stamp things. It was someone who had an active role in steering the corporate ship. And
I'm struck a little bit by the fact that I subscribe to a text message service from KCBS Radio. It's their breaking news service, and it is very strict. You will get breaking news text only in very big news stories, and some of them are Bay Area. The Messerly trial. He was the man who shot Oscar Grant in the BART. Most of the country doesn't know about that. I got text messages about that. Proposition 8, the gay marriage proposition in California. Again, a local issue. But here are the last three text messages from this. Osama bin Laden is dead and U.S. authorities have his body. President Obama has announced he and congressional leaders have reached a debt ceiling deal. And reaction pouring into the death of Apple co-founder Steve Jobs today, who died at the age of 56. You know, maybe you could consider that last one a Bay Area story because, you know, Apple is in the Bay Area. But it's interesting. It's hard when you're in the bubble covering this to realize that this how big the story should be outside the bubble.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, you go to any foreign news site, newspaper or news information source, and they will have a story on it. I mean, you know, whether it's BBC or I forgot the French agency or the Australian papers, they're all there. And, you know, it really is a testament to the impact that Steve Jobs made, you know, with his products. I mean, it's really impressive. When you think about it, it's just a piece of technology. It's just a phone. It's just a MP3 player. It's just a computer. But the way it's allowed people to kind of reach beyond just the mere utilitarian aspect of that product, I think, is what's so amazing about the way Steve Jobs, you know, created or refashioned Apple after it was rolled out, and then he was brought back in because the company was suffering immensely under the former leadership of Scully. It's quite a testament to a man who's done a lot in a specific field, but that one field has managed to touch so many lives.
Yeah. Well, I think we'll wrap it up there. That's it for this edition of East Meets West. You can share your opinions at subbrilliant.com/EMW. Thanks to everybody who does so, and we will talk to you next time.
Bye.
About this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.